This is where racism is built, because if you, oh, I don't want to understand, it's not my thing, it's not for me. Well, actually, you should be curious. That curious mind helps you reframe your thinking, but then by reframing their minds, oh yes, and they were able to do the work perfectly fine and no issues. Like, see, you don't need to be a black man to understand it. You just need to be able to have that curious mind and solution mindset to be able to work on any project and just be curious and educate yourself.
On today's show, we have the incredible Flavilla Fongan. She is a multi-award-winning serial entrepreneur and an international keynote speaker. Computer Weekly named her the number one most influential tech woman in the UK. Mercedes-Benz awarded Flavilla the She Mercedes Businesswoman Award. She's also the founder of Global Tech Advocates, Black Women in Tech, the largest organization of black professional women in tech, and is the founder of Three Colors Raw, an award-winning branding and marketing agency. Author of 99 Strategies to Get Customers, Flavilla is also the creator of Black Rise, the first platform connecting the business world and skilled black professionals. And lastly, she is the entrepreneurship expert with the Entrepreneurship Centre for said business school, University of Oxford.
Courageous leadership means that you are ready to be disliked and having strong values, understanding exactly what you want to achieve, and be prepared to have this tough conversation. And if you can't be a courageous leader, you can't change the world. It's our responsibility not just to look at leaders at the financial results and financial outcomes, but also what impact are we making on community, what impact are we making on the planet, and so other things. With the era of cancel culture and how people now have a voice and can use social media to express how they feel about a brand, we have to be more responsible.
I am Joanna Howes, your host, and this is the Courageous Leaders Club podcast. It's a space to inspire leaders to step into their courageous zone and be the leader they know they can be. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Courageous Leaders podcast. I am so excited for this episode today because we have the incredible Flavilla Fongan with us today. Flavilla, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Joanna. I'm so excited about this episode with you.
Oh, so am I. And we've got so much to get into on this episode because there is so much you've achieved. I would love to know, first of all, what does courageous leadership mean to you?
Such a good question. Courageous leadership for me means being comfortable, being an uncomfortable situation. Leadership means that you are the one people go to when there's a problem and guiding them to also find a solution themselves. Courageous leadership means that you are ready to be disliked and having strong values, understanding exactly what you want to achieve and be prepared to have this tough conversation. And if you can't be a courageous leader, you can't change the world. And you have to prepare for the bad and the good. The good comes usually after the bad and the challenges and the hurdles.
I love it. What's just really stood out for me there is like, you need to be courageous if you want to change the world. But I think maybe then, I don't know, this has just come to me that there's maybe two types of leaders. You've got leaders who just go into a leadership position because, you know, they just want to live their life, do their thing. But then you've got these courageous leaders that actually want to make an impact, leave a legacy and change the world. Was that something that was important to you, that you have an ability to change the world?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting when you say that. I have so many situations where I've seen leaders who just follow and do what they've been told. And there's nothing wrong being doing what you've been told. And there's always leaders who come and say, wait a minute, there's something wrong with the status quo that we're living in and we can do something different. I was listening this morning, I love Masterclass, and I was listening to the, I can't remember the name, but she's used to be the former CEO of Pepsi, and she's such a brilliant woman, what she's done to change beyond that. And she really say that we are now living this era where we need to change. What capitalism means that if we just keep on just focusing on money, we're going to just keep on destroying the world and keep on creating disparity. So we are responsible. It's our responsibility not just to look at leaders at the financial results and financial outcomes, but also what impact are we making on community? What impact are we making on the planet and so other things? Because with the era of cancel culture and how people now have a voice and can use social media to express how they feel about a brand, we have to be more responsible. And that's super important for me. So I took a stand, you know, in this approach, you know, being in the marketing and specifically focusing on a specific community, which, you know, we can talk about it a bit later, was clear for me. And I was ready for the backlash as, you know, why this specific community, but it was important to me and it makes sense to what I wanted to achieve. And now people look and people say, oh, shouldn't do this. And I say, I'm glad you didn't listen to me.
Wow. So I can't wait to get to that. And the thing, listeners listening, it's so inspiring because you found your cause. You found something that you really wanted to focus on. And I would say myself, I'm still on that journey. And this is why I was so inspired by you, that you found it and you've gone all in. Before we get to that point, I'd love the listeners to hear your story. How have you got to where you are at the moment?
So I was born in Paris. And when I say Paris, we always think that, wow, you're so lucky. You live in a city of love and beautiful. But there's a part of Paris people don't see, which is the ghetto of Paris. So that's a part where I was raised by my mother, family of five children, one bed flats. I think that's what you call it. Yeah, one bed flat. So imagine if you have five kids, you can't really go very far. So I didn't have the luxury of having my own bedroom and so on. So really, you know, deprived of a lot of things that, you know, a lot of kids would have loved to have at this age. But that didn't stop me. I think there's one thing that I was lucky to hear the story about is that we were still finding joy in poverty. And that's one thing that my mom really taught us, Jim, be proud of yourself. Don't let anybody have pity for you. And I walked this life with that mindset to make sure that, you know, people don't come and choose to work for me because, you know, they feel sorry for me just because they know the value that I bring to the table. And then I moved to London and I didn't speak English. I was crazy enough to just go into a country that was not too far away, but it would challenge me. And I figured by nature, I love a challenge. And that's what led me to find myself in London. I was meant to be in London for 1 year and I fell in love with the city. Was really my perception of myself change. My reflections changed in the sense that for the first time I could see individuals who looked like me on TV. And I was there on stage and people just laughed, but it's so true that the first time I watched EastEnders, I was like, wow. Anybody can make it in this country. You don't have to be young and beautiful and size 10. Oh, wow, this is different. This is very refreshing. Well, what you see on TV, you know, if you're not blonde, blue eyes, not going to happen, right? And then I could see as well all the black bulls who seem to be doing much better than what I saw in Paris. I said, wait, hold on a minute. I think if I stay in this country, I probably have a better outcome. And I decided to stay and I find myself working in the oil and gas sector. So I was working in the van industry, oil and gas specifically. And this really changed me as well because I was opening myself to the world. I traveled places that I would have never gone to, Saudi Arabia, but I loved it. Asia to Africa, obviously, South America. And I really made me realize how narrow-minded I was because I always thought that everybody lived the same way and you come and you enter another country and as well, people, this is how people operate. And really, that's when I realized the importance of diversity. We don't see the world the same way and it's important to also have people at the table who can understand and speak on behalf of the individuals who look like them. And then from that, you know, passion for fashion started when I was young because, again, you know, as I mentioned, you know, grew up family of five, didn't have a lot of things, so we had to be creative. So sometimes creativity breeds creativity and you've seen, and that's why I love, you know, when you're complacent, nothing really happens. But when you are you know, challenged or frustrated, something happens, you want to change. And for us, you know, I use my creativity to be able to change clothes with my sister. We used to, you know, go into vintage store. And the people don't know that you used to buy clothes by the kilo. There's areas in Paris where you buy clothes by the kilo. And that's how my mom will buy clothes for us. And then, yes, so I use fashion. Fashion was a way of expressing. I understand that the way I dress, people change their perception and behavior around me. So I use that as my superpower. So I used to then give advice to women and men as well, how to, you know, dress well. And I didn't know it was called personal branding, but I was doing this at that point. And I decided to quit my job in the oil and gas sector and to follow my passion for fashion. And I was working as a fashion consultant. This is also when Free Colors World was born. Free Colors was born as a fashion consultancy first, before it became now a branding and marketing agency. And it didn't change the name for a reason. Working then in fashion, and it was great, but again, something I felt very limited, because, you know, when you are an entrepreneur, you are a consultant, if you get sick, then you don't make money. And also, I was getting to a point where I was not learning something new, so I need to change. So I'm always challenging myself. If I feel like I'm not, growing, then I need to do something else. And I realized quickly something: I'm always have an open mind and listen to what people tell me. And he said to me, "I want to do the same thing as you." And I realized there was not a lot of great fashion courses, so I took my knowledge and put it to a course, and people were now moving to having an academy where I was training people to become fashion stylists, which was a lot of fun. And then from that point, again, you know, it's so funny because every transition happened so naturally. So at that point, my ex-boyfriend at the time, who's still good friends, was running a plumbing business, very successful business. I just realized, oh my gosh, that's how plumbing business makes money. It's like, I should go into plumbing business. But it was terrible at building a brand. He had a great business, but he didn't have a brand where he could not detach himself from the day-to-day. I said, well, how about you change how you present your business? And I think it was funny because on his website, for example, he had a boiler. I said, well, that's not what people buy. People buy, you know, the safety and other things. A good plumber, the pleasure of being at home. That's why you're selling an experience. Can you sell that? Then you have a great brand. And again, I would know that what I didn't know was called branding. I was like, oh, okay, let me self-teach. So just to also explain that everything that I've done after university has been for self-learning. So I've consciously been learning new things. So I learned how to be a fashion stylist. I would spend my time on Amazon buying books. Same thing with my career into branding. I spend my time reading books about design and so forth to really, you know, perfection my knowledge. And I find my calling very much in the psychology. I love the psychology because I was studying psychology when I was in university already, but around marketing, so which was called neuromarketing. And that's when I thought that the best way to differentiate myself in this, you know, this pool of great marketing experts was neuromarketing. It was a way to engage audience, and at the same time explain that our subconscious mind has a bigger impact on how we perceive things. And then my journey as a keynote speaker started as such, and I've been lucky to travel so many different places to talk about this topic, but beyond as well, now talking about marketing technology and so on and so on. I was giving to my clients a lot of advice, like pick a niche, you know, as a marketer, as an agency, pick a niche. But I wasn't doing the same because I was still working in oil and gas because of my background. I was still working in fashion and I was also working in technology. I said, wait a minute, hold the phone. We're doing too many things. Let's pick one. And I came to this decision that technology was my focus as an agency. Because I was on Twitter and I love the story of this little black girl who created technology that allowed kids who travel miles to go to schools, find their way back home, taking the wrong turn and finding a lion. And I thought, wow, that's the people I want to work with change makers. And that's how it all started. As I entered the technology space, I realized, wow, in oil and gas, I was still the only one, you know, and I understand maybe a lot of people have a lot of interest for oil and gas, even though it's in everything that we do. But technology is very impactful. This can't be happening. So part of our CSR for the agency said, let's do something, let's create a network where we really help and try to bring Black women tech together and so forth. And out of nowhere, this went bonkers and we could not operate it as part of the agency because a brand such as Deutsche Bank came and said, we want to sponsor your event, So we had to set up ourselves. Okay. So I go to my accountant, like, okay, what is it? This is me, Flavie, like, what are you doing again? It's like, let me have set me up as a non-profit. And Deutsche Bank said, can you send us an invoice? It's coming. So I literally opened an account. Thank God for technology that allows you to open an account very quickly, set up on company house, boom, and we're up and running. I was able to send invoice and say, wait a minute, we have something here. And realized brand after the other had really interested in working with us. And that's when I realized that a lot of brands struggle to attract Black female talent, which is lowest number of women in technology, 0.7%. That's the amount of women in technology. Wow. Not even 1%, which is really sad. And a great network of Black women, and one after the other, we now across different channels, a community of 22,000 individuals, which also includes allies, which is amazing. And then for that journey, I realized that why is this number such? It's not normal that these companies can attract talent, but also why is not enough women, Black women, thinking about career in technology. And that's when I thought about my own self journey. What was the role model that I had? If you ask people, think about a Black person in history, they can't name a single person. People say, oh, wow. If you ask a kid, they ask this question to a kid and not a single kid could name a Black person in history, which was really sad for me. And I thought, wow, there's so much power in books. And this is where the beginning of the voice in the shadow started. I get some people say to me when I went for advice, we say, yeah, there's no money in books. I say, I'm not doing it for money. I still went for it. And sometimes you have to be comfortable with the naysayers, the people who are narrow-minded or try to project their limitation to yours. And be careful about who you are. Also, people be careful who you share your ideas with. Some people will just put you in the wrong direction or not give you. So trust your gut instincts. Your gut instincts tell you something off. Trust it. Every time you do not listen, you regret it. And yeah, so that's how it all started. So 3 years ago, we decided to do this. We are now on our third volume and we've been distributing these books for free to schools and now libraries across the UK and Ireland. And we opened chapters in Ireland, opened a chapter now in France, and then next year we're opening another chapter in Germany. So a lot of people go to America, I'm thinking, okay, great, America, but it's easy way, because there's a lot of Black talent, but I'm thinking where I can really make an impact in Europe, where the perception of Black people is different. You know, I just came back from a trip to Malaga. And me and my partner feel very outnumbered. What's the places we went to, you know? And it's important that people recognize within the diversity since there's a lot of greater opportunities. And that's something that I'm really passionate about. That journey, because the thing I really want to show you how this transition happens is that people to recognize problems, but also recognize the solution. Where most people sit and think, yeah, oh, that's how things are done. It should always be like that. And some people are able to think, you know what? No, somebody needs to take care of it. You know, and sometimes it has to be you and somebody say, oh my gosh, I remember doing a talk and someone said, there's no great leaders where I live. I said, but you can be that person. If you can't see great leaders, be that person. Don't wait for somebody to save you. Save yourself first. And that's so important. And that led me to thinking that, my gosh, if I can do, create such a great network of 22,000 with GTA Black Global Tech Advocates, Black Women in Tech, GTA Black Women in Tech, what can I do if I open the pool across different industry, but also men? And that's what now leads me to create my first tech company. So I'm sitting on the other side now of creating my first tech company, where I'm creating a business intelligence platform where Black talent professionals, entrepreneurs, business owners can connect among one another, but also the rest of the world can connect with them. So we say you can't find Black talent, come into Black Rise. You say you can't find your supplier, diverse suppliers, come into Black Rise. And that's what I'm trying to create, but also normalize the excellence. And like you saw, the Black Rise podcast had the most amazing individuals who have built seven figure, because I only interview people who are either part of seven figure businesses leading or who have built seven figure businesses. And it's just a really, really a little, not even 1% of what I know. And every week we are releasing new stories of how I've done it to really normalize that there's amazing Black talent in this space. And yeah, so this is where I am right now.
Congratulations. What a story. And there's so much in there. And, you know, you started Three Colors. You then thought, right, I'm going to do a book. You've now done, is it Black Rise? And you've done loads of awards along the way. What do you believe? If someone's listening going, oh, I just don't know if I could do that. What do you believe that's in you? What are some of the traits that have helped you look at a problem and see a solution? What are the traits you feel an individual needs to be able to do that?
It's a great question, because I actually was talking about this last week. And creativity and innovation cannot be born without experiences or having a story. And I've said to my audiences last week, if I remove your memory, can you be creative? And none of them were. No, it can't. Yes. So how are you living your life? And are you able then from this experience, able to translate this emotion into a frustration and then into a solution? Most people stop at frustration and accept it. And then the thinking is that I'm able to see the frustration and I'm able to see possibilities. And I love, you know, some of the leaders I speak to say, when you look at the mega trends, this is a, you know, the pandemic, there will be more and more pandemic as the populations are growing, as people want to eat protein and animals, viruses will translate into human. But also we have an aging population. We have a rise of technology, which is disrupting every industry. So you can look at problems saying, oh my gosh, I'm scared. You know, the world is collapsing. Or you can say there's great opportunities in this to solve those issues. And that's what, where I've always rewired my mindset and think as such. And therefore, I also have the same approach in terms of how I lead my team. It's so funny because my team is diverse, which is brilliant. And all funny enough, minority from Asian to female to Black and so forth, right? And one of them were working on on a project for Black women. They said, oh, I don't know if I can work on a project. I'm not a Black woman. I said, and I asked the same question, like, if I give you $1 million to work on a fintech project, can you work on it on blockchain? Say, yes. Okay. So what's the difference? Yeah. I said, so now I put money in front of you. You can see the thinking, right? So if you think that, and this is where racism and systematic racism is built, because you think, oh, I don't want to understand. It's not my thing. It's not for me. Well, actually, that curious mind helps you reframe your thinking. But then by reframing their minds, oh, yes. And they were able to do the work perfectly fine and no issues. Like, see, you don't need to be a Black man to understand it. just need to be able to have that curious mind and solution mindset to be able to work on any project and just be curious and educate yourself. So I guess it's a muscle that you develop through time. You know, I wouldn't say that happens overnight. It's a muscle you develop through time, because whatever I apply in business, I apply it as well in my personal life. In our family of five, I'm the middle child, so I had to look after the last children. So therefore, people come to you or ask for to make decisions. So you have to think on your feet naturally. And I'm probably one of these person who thrive under pressure. Some people can't, but you know, for me, it's like I'm in this situation. My brain will process very fast. But it's a muscle that you develop through time. It doesn't happen overnight. And I love to take the example of my brother and I, we love to travel. So one trip we went to Mexico and we were in Chichen Itza. And I'm wearing the wrong shoes, typical me. Like, so I'm wearing those shoes and we're on top of this massive pyramid. I'm thinking, oh my God, this is really high. And I said to myself, instead of looking at the top, I'm just going to look at the step in front of me. And that's what I did. And by the time I got to the top, I was like, wow, I'm here. Woo! And when I got to the top and I see this family with a 3-year-old child, how this family made it to the top? But again, something, it's amazing how when you look around you, how you can reframe your thinking, like, and you think that, wow, this family can do and travel with 2 kids under 3. What, and when people think that, oh, when I have kids, I will never travel. My life stops when I have kids. And people just showed you that, wow, they can still do it. And travel with 3, you know, kids under 3 years old. It was like, well, this is amazing. So yeah. That's just you. And that's a great example of how expenses can change you.
It's a great, great example. And I had one recently. I was in Argentina and we hiked to the top of a mountain. I'm standing there looking at the view and I suddenly heard a baby crying. And I'm like, am I hallucinating? Is it the altitude? I don't know. I look around and there's someone changing their baby's nappy on the top of a mountain. My mind just blew. And I was like, oh my word. And I'm out of breath. And this guy has just carried his baby up here with all the kids. Well, and it was just a sign of, it is totally how you choose to think about something. Mm. You can say that's not possible. You can say, I'll find a way. I'd say myself, I've been a victim to it. And I think what's so remarkable about what you've done, which I'm inspired by, is you chose something to back. It really was, you know, a real sense of Black women in tech, diversity, getting voices heard. And the excuse my brain gives me is that there's so much choice. So what I've done, there's so much choice that I've never picked to just go all in. And that gives me a brilliant procrastination strategy. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many people I want to help. That means I'm actually not helping anybody. And you just go, why? Where's those limiting beliefs that you don't think that you as an individual could make an impact? Or even, as you said, take that first step.
I would say that, you know, it's interesting because I'm having a conversation with developers about my product. And one of them, you know, and I love that people challenge me and say, oh, I love what your product is about. Why is it only for Black people? And I say, like, you know, you can make so much money if you make it for everybody, right? And, you know, for a minute, you know, I'm thinking about that. That makes a valid point. This is why you have to not be scared by the choice that you make, in a sense that if you believe that, first of all, you have to make sure that your pool that you choose is big enough. Because if you post to some of them, obviously, then, you know, you probably say, I don't choose the right niche. But also you have to think beyond just money. And it's right. It's like, I could actually make this business intelligence platform available to everybody. The point is that it is available to everybody. Wow. Everybody can join. It's not inclusive. Like, if you're not a Black person, you can't be on the platform. Anybody can be on the platform. But my focus is on this because I understand the metrics. Who has a level of poverty is in the Black community. Who has a less access to opportunities is in the Black community. And if I now make it like a broader general platform, I'm kind of losing the point of why I started.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it didn't come for bad intention, it's just like, oh, you can make more money if you do this and da, 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 and so forth. But again, you have to be comfortable with your choices. And I've seen people who are millionaires who are miserable. And for me, some of them were my mentors. And what's the point of focusing so much on on one area of your life and you neglect everything else. And I feel, oh my gosh, I don't, that's not how I want to build my success. And again, serving people only evaluate success by money.
Yeah.
How much money is like people get awards and give recognition, because that's what people recognize, because they can measure this. But your success is time. Are you able to have time for yourself? Are you able to have build a nice family where you can take your Sunday? You can actually spend, go and see your football. For me, that's what success represents to me. Not being like, oh, I have all this money, I drive a Porsche. And what's interesting is that those individuals who have everything will get to the top, then go back to the basic. And you can see if they say, oh, I drove all the Porsche, I had the Rolex, now they come back to a Toyota. Because they realize all of that was not really important. Maybe in the phase of your life was great. And I'm saying there's nothing wrong with having a nice car. You should have deserved luck. I love experience and great experience. But I think it's important in terms of what really do you value. If you have, you know, big house, what is really important? Having a 20-bedroom house or having enough to just welcome your family and having great time to spend time with your family? And that's what's so key about this, like use numbers, and your numbers say, okay, if it's comfortable enough for me to know that I will not lose anything. And you might still come with out of your target audience, say, oh, actually, I know that you need this, but I still want to work with you.
And I think you say the word focus quite a lot, which I think has maybe been part of your success. Because I also know when we spoke before with your company, you have this focus of your work with 10 clients. So then that enables you to make sure you've got the time to do the voices in the shadows and your other, and the legacy work you want to do. How effective was that strategy to go, right, that is what I'm going to do?
That strategy was super effective because we started doing value-based pricing. It was easier if you come to me to make a logo at £500, that's, I'm not the one. But if you come to a company that will give you the best and the service that you want, and we don't put any time limitation, and we do value-based pricing, your success match are what we also get paid. Then people know that you are looking as, they see you as an extension of their business, not just, oh, I'm just here to deliver something and whatever happens to you, it's up to you, right? And that's changed completely the conversation. We talk about value-based pricing. So most people say, okay, well, I set my pricing and this is what it costs. I can say, what are you trying to achieve? What is the value of what you're going to achieve? What impact you make on your business? Would you rather pay? Would you rather I charge you, you know, a fixed fee, or would you rather I help you get, make sure that you achieve this result, but I take 10% or 3% of what you're trying to make? And when you know that somebody is going to do everything to achieve this, then that gives you the more better focus to know that you're not rushing and you're giving half of the job. And that's super important in terms of how I push this. Because it's again something, what is important to me is not just money. You know, I've seen people who have had all the money in the world and they're miserable. So it means like, and also it's about defining, I think it's about like defining it. How much money do you need to make to be sufficiently happy? And I feel like people don't have this question in mind. Like, how much money do you need to make per month to feel like, yes, I'm living comfortable? When you're bad, but you say, okay, great. So this is what I need to make, but I'm comfortable with my choices.
And then with those choices, then the impact you've been able to make has been huge. And it's hard because I've come from working in big, you know, corporate companies where it is all about keeping the shareholders happy, the money. And it's such a shame because you just see how then the innovation suffers, the people suffer. You lose that sense of freedom of having that choice in having that impact. There's a cost to it if you're just focused on making money.
100%. I heard this word and I thought it was brilliant, mega trend. So, and I know that, you know, the biggest CEOs around the world have to consciously have this battle with their shareholders. And when they want to, we have ideas or strategies that they want to implement, use facts to really validate your point and also understand what that person. I love this book called Never Split the Difference. So Master Negotiator is brilliant. Explain that, you know, most people think that being a great negotiator is having your way. Actually, it's not about that. It's actually finding what people want and giving them that. And so Fauvenis done it in the Oster situation where people were chopping heads and so forth, and how it's been able to really articulate that. And it's so powerful when you understand this. And that's why I love mindset and psychology, because it's so fascinating when you understand those two. You know, you can really, I wouldn't say manipulate, but you can really get what you want to achieve. And nobody will feel that, wow, you're running, you know, non-profit and you're able to do this. Who will back you up? Oh, there's not enough black men. But, you know, I'm working now, the biggest FTSE 500 in the world, who are supporting our activities and means something that they share. We share the same values, share the same vision.
And the importance of that. That connectivity and that alignment, which I'm guessing now you're really attracting the clients you want to work with, and that a different quality.
Mm-hmm.
You said about mindset. You know, I've got here, you won the Entrepreneur of the Year award at the BTA Awards, and that's one of many awards that you've won, you know, most influential women in tech. What for you really truly is an entrepreneurial mindset, and how do you bring that to life?
So entrepreneurial mindset comes back from so many ways, and doesn't it? It's not only for people who are running businesses, it also can be people who are actually employed. I always say people, think about a brand that you love. You love that brand because of what you expect from them, or do you love that brand because of what you don't expect them to do? And they continually surprise you. And I learned that from some great fashion designers. And that rule always said for me that you must always surprise. And that's super important. Like, when is the last time? Again, something, any relationship. Think about, you know, you take somebody for, for an event, or your partner, you take it away. How can you surprise them? The element of surprise, that's what built on emotion. And this is also what we call as well emotional intelligence. And anybody can do this, right? So why can you do that people don't expect from you? And that's beauty as well, I love about, you know, and this is what keeps them on their toes. And if you stay, you know, if you think about the companies like Kodak or Blockbusters, who was just comfortable with, oh, we're making enough money. We're comfortable in here. I never really look at the bigger picture, whatever mega trend, what is going, you will always be ahead. And I think part of that, that's where entrepreneurship comes from, is that the ability to always think, I'm not going to be, not necessarily like, don't say complacent in a situation that nothing's going to change because the world evolved. We can't stop progress, but you can evolve with it. And that's why I said, you know, it's so funny. I was talking to a major conference and what data researchers, advertisers and so forth. And I said that everybody should be like Tony Stark. And if you know, if you're a big Marvel fan, so Tony Stark is Iron Man. And I say, huh? She's like, what is Tony Stark? You know, Tony Stark is Iron Man, but what makes really Tony Stark? Tony Stark is Jarvis. Yes. Now in the AI, are you co-creating? Or are you still trying to create? Are you still writing, or blog on your own? You can still write a blog on your own, but can you co-create? The technology is out there. And I want you to reframe your thinking. And this is what I done with my team. And I said to him, like, I want you to think, you know, at the beginning of the year, I want you to think how you can replace, you know, how AI can replace your job. And look at me like, huh? He's like, no, I'm not for you. I just want you to think in terms of, because if you don't do it, somebody else is going to do it. You know, it's not AI is going to replace you as a person using it. And it's super important that you do not fear progress and see how you can not only make sure that the regulations and the things are put in place and joining the conversation, AI, women, minorities, you know, reskilling and all these things that are important to influence the space, because you can't change it. Because if we don't, and certain people are like, oh, that is happening. Well, if you don't do it, China will do it.
Yeah, 100%. Embrace progress and believe that actually you can make a difference and lean into it.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, definitely. So for any of the listeners listening who are interested in what you're doing with Black Rise, how do they get involved? It's not completely launched yet, is it?
So I'm a marketer, so I do pre-launch campaigns. So I'm building my waiting list before I launch it. So I want to make sure that there's interest. And by the time I launch it, I have enough people. So Our goal is to reach 5,000 people on our waiting list before we open the room for more. But the idea of it is that, I love this thing, it's super powerful. And every time people come to me and say, have you done this? Like, no. It's like, you're going to launch the app and you don't have anybody on your waiting list. Should have come to me sooner. Yeah, so Black Rise, we're at the point we're in the pre-launch campaign. So we're finalizing the design. We know we're going to move soon into development next year, which would be great. And the idea is that, you know, we keep refining. But what I'm having right now is a lot of great conversations, career conversations. You know, even when I was in my leg, I was like, wow, I didn't think about this, but I love it. I mean, my partner's like, why people would join this? Is they're already using LinkedIn? And I was like, it's a good point. It's a good question. Because I have to be careful with those objections. And I'm trying, you know, I'm reframing the copy and so forth. So at the moment, people can go on the theblackrise.com website and join the waiting list. And again, it's tailored for supporting the Black community, but anybody can join because, again, something if you're looking from a point of view of looking to attract talents in different industries or looking to have a diversify your suppliers list, then this is it. This is the right platform.
And on this waiting list, this is for people that are looking for work and also companies that are looking for talent.
It's not people looking for work. It's people looking, the point of it is to help people connect, empower them. So if CEOs of top firms can join as well. So the platform will allow people to not just, entrepreneurial ideas is born from conversation. So the platform will allow people to join, attend events, join clubs. And so we're very tailored for the industry. So, for example, Black female CMOs. So we want to talk about their role and so forth. So they can be to join these clubs. But again, in some cases, as a business, you'll be able to find as well business opportunities. As an investor, you'll be able to see who are the companies who are performing very well. So where can you look at who to invest in? Depending on what you're joining for, you will have different objectives. You would experience a platform differently. And that's what's so important. Again, something that's why I love to, again, something, you know, these conversations are great because you learn from all entrepreneurs. Oh, I've done it. Okay, great, fantastic. And then you can start forming your ideas in terms of how it works. So as a CEO, you have a different experience for somebody who may be just a young graduate. Or as an investor, you have a different experience from somebody who's a business owner. And that's why we're trying to create a really 360 where we can connect, share insights, but also really beyond just digital space, connect in real life. Because we need to, I think what's important then for me is that all the technology should bring back humanity together. Yeah. And if we're not this, we're losing the point and we're just creating more isolation.
Beautifully said. And on that note, with everything you've done, I'm so curious to know that advice you'd have given your younger self.
Invest sooner in gaining, you know, capital gain. So beyond that, so secure your future, make wise investment in things that will build your portfolio. But as, again, from a point of view, invest in connections, building great network. You know, your network is your net worth. And I would say that all the time. And I say that to, you know, to the young ones, if you stay at home, how are you going to build your network? So build your network very well. Invest in continuously learning. Happiness sits in people who are always living new experiences, traveling and so forth. I've been lucky. I've been to so many places around the world. And that's my happy place. You know, I always rather book a flight than buying an expensive pair of shoes. Invest in protecting your peace. It's so important. Be comfortable saying no by explanation. Yeah, just, and I've seen so many people going through burnout and end up saying, oh my gosh, why are you not getting burnout? Like, because I just protect my peace. I'm comfortable saying, no, I can't do it, but I'll put you in the right direction. Like, I'm not the right person for this, do this. Because sometimes they say, oh, I want you to mentor me. Like, I'm not the right person for you right now. To go to this person. And I redirect it.
There's something you just said there that really resonated. Be okay with saying no without explanation. That is incredibly powerful because so for many years, as someone I know, if they didn't want to do something, they felt they had to come up with this whole elaborate, well, this is why I don't want to do it and all this justification. I'm like, you can say no That was very powerful, because I don't think many people feel that you can just say no, that you need to have this whole backlog of why you're saying no.
As you become more and more visible in your space, people want more of you. And sometimes it feels for celebrity feeling. You can't sit at the, it was a video of Cristiano Ronaldo sitting in the restaurant, and he could not have a coffee. Everybody one at a time would come and take a picture of you. So people feel that you belong to them because they see you for socials. They think that they know you. But they think that they know, that I know them too, because maybe we had an interaction. And so, but they don't realize that I'm probably speaking to hundreds of people per day. And unless I've met you more than three times, I probably don't remember you, right?
Yeah.
And it's super important. But again, something that's why protecting your peace is so important, and be comfortable to say to it, we know that you can't make everybody happy. I think you have to be comfortable. You can't make everybody happy. There's some people pleasing, and be comfortable saying no.
Yeah. My mum always said to me, big lesson was, Joe, the sooner you learn that not everyone's going to like you, the easier your life will be. I was like, okay, yeah, stop trying to make everyone like you. I was like, okay, calm down. But I do love that saying as well, protect your peace. I've not heard that before. I think that's lovely. Really nice. Before we close, is there any final message or ask for the audience that you'd like to give?
I would say don't be afraid to put yourself first. I think as the woman first, I think that as women, we become mothers, or we become sisters, we become leaders and so forth, and put ourselves at the bottom of the priority list. And I think that if you put yourself first, you'd be a better leader, you'd be a better mother, you'd be a better everything. And for the men as well, I would say that understand the power of your influence. Don't use it just for yourself, but just use it as well to support other people. It would, I say life is like a French bakery. If you come today and there's no baguette, come back tomorrow. There's always enough opportunities. And this is what for me, competition, I don't really see competition. I see people who are trying to solve the same problem. And if you can get this move from that angle, you can come together and make great impact for your industry. So really think about this, like, what can you do beyond just yourself? And I wish more people knew how satisfying it is to help somebody and how rewarding it is to know the impact that you make can change somebody's life forever.
For me, what came up there is just have a generous spirit.
Give first before you want to receive. If you have a mentality to provide great value and giving first, the world will give you 100 times more. But if you go in the mindset of getting first, and people come and they give you a business card, like, oh my God, don't even have a conversation, just want to get something out of me. You're not building relationships. So see how you can give first and the rest.
Thank you so, so much. I'm inspired. I feel like I'm like coming off the call, I'm like, wow, I want to do this, I want to do that. So thank you for sharing your story and your insights. And I know the listeners will take so much away from it. So thank you for your time, and thank you for everyone listening. And we will tune in and see you on next week's episode. Take care, everybody. A huge thank you to you for listening to the Courageous Leaders Club. I'd love to know if anything from today's conversation resonated with you and what your key takeaway is. Will you do anything differently? Have you learned something you'll take forward in your own leadership? Do take a moment to connect with us on LinkedIn, where you can share your thoughts. You can connect personally with me at my email, joanna.hounds@thechangecreators.com. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do. This will really help us grow our podcast and reach and help as many people as possible. If you can think of someone who will benefit from listening to this podcast, please do share it with them. Finally, for those of you who are seeking to take action today, you can book a free strategy call with me, and together we can produce an action plan to implement into your leadership and business. You can head to the link in the show notes to book now. Thank you so much again for listening, and I'll meet again on the next episode of the Courageous Leaders Club.